Welcome everyone to this OPAL online presentation about the Irish in America, presented by the Library of Congress. We have two librarians from the Library of Congress with us today, Judy Graves and Peter Armenti, and they'll be showing us some of the rich resources they have available at the Library of Congress about one of the major national groups to emigrate to the United States. Before we get started, I want to mention this is the first time in this room. There are basically two ways to communicate. You can move your cursor into the text chat input box in the left center of the screen. Just type in your message and press return, and it'll go out to everyone in the room. Or if you have a microphone connected to or embedded in your computer, by pressing and holding the control key, you can speak using voice over IP. I also want to mention that this session is being recorded and will be made available soon after the conclusion of today's program in the OPAL archive. The OPAL URL is www.opal-online.org. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming Judy Graves and Peter Armenti from the Library of Congress. Thanks.
Hi, everyone. Do we have people who are new to web conferences here? You can try out your text chat by saying either yes or no, or you can try out your microphone. Remember, you can press down on the control key if you want to speak, but this is a very polite environment, and if you see a number of blue bubbles, they will have numbers in them, so you can talk in turn. So, everybody tell me, are you new to this type of conferencing?
No.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Everyone's had an opportunity just to test out the conference software and just sort of kick the tire, so to speak. Now, next question as part of this, are you new to the Library of Congress website?
Yes.
Okay. Well, what we're going to do is take you through some of the wonderful materials that we have on this site in our digital library with the theme of Irish in America. You are right now on our homepage, and two things. One, we have a handout. It's online, and while I'm talking, I know Tom Peters will type, put the URL in the dialogue box so everyone will have it. But don't click on it. And what you're looking at right now is our homepage. And if you look across the top where all these colored tabs are, where it says Library Catalogs, American Memory, Exhibitions, Global Gateway, and Thomas, behind these links are all of the multimedia items that we're going to be showing today. We have movies, we have sound recordings, we have great documents, photographs, cartoons, all sorts of things that we're going to look at online. And you can get to them later by coming up here and going into the collections. You can get to them from the handout that we've got, or you can get to them by coming in and searching on your own. Definitely you can get to them if you come to this homepage and you look at for the Ask a Librarian button on the left-hand side under Library Resources. I'm right here on the left under Library Resources. The third link down is Ask a Librarian. If you click on, and I need to turn on synchronized browsing so you can come with me. So synchronized browsing is on, which means that when I click on a page, you'll come with me. So the third link down is Ask a Librarian, and everyone came with me to this page. And if you scroll down just a bit, you'll see Digital Collections. And if you go to Digital Reference Team, anything you see here are here during this program. Come here and you can submit a question and someone on the Digital Reference Team will answer it. So that's just a little orientation to the website as we begin. And the one thing we wanted to do this month was to use Irish in America as our theme. And I'm going to read to you from the handout that we have online. Green is the color as people across the United States celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Why is it widely acknowledged? Who were the Irish people who came and settled here? And what did they do to merit such a celebration? So we're going to look at first-person accounts, songs, photographs, maps, and other items that tell the story of Irish in America. And that's pretty much what we hope to do. Now, I'm going to call your attention to a feature presentation that we have in our education area. It's called the Irish Immigration and Irish in America. Okay, everyone, you should see this particular page in your window. Now, another way that this web conference works is that I can bring you to a page, but I cannot scroll around and have it scroll down for you. So what you can do for yourself is use the slider bars on the side of your browser window, and you can scroll down to the rest of the page and read the text, but you can also click on the images that you see, and it will take you to these particular images in the collections. Or you can click on other links at the bottom and learn all about the Irish in America and the different, under these different segments down at the bottom of the screen. So why don't you give that a try for just a minute, just to get to see how this works. Then we will move on. Is anyone having any difficulty, or have you found something you might like to share? Tom says that he didn't realize that Philly was a major entry point. I also did not know that Baltimore was an entry point as well, or that Charleston either. But port towns, and as we'll see in a moment from an 1870 census, we'll see exactly where they settled. Another feature about these web conferences, and it's wonderful because you can speak and you can type, but the way we try to do these is that we create a space where we'll show you something, but then we want you to interact both with our materials and with us. So please, if you have any comments or questions, as Tom and Victoria are doing, please, please comment. Now, did you know that the Irish came over in two waves? Not just the time of the potato famine, but early in the history of the United States. We are going to go look at a map that's part of the census of 1870 that are actually before that. We're going to go look at a broadside document that talks about the revolutionary time frame. Okay, you are with me on the Peter is giving information about the crazy URLs in American memory. And if you look at the URL Peter just put in the dialog box, the last two parentheses are in black, not blue. That's the way the software works. But to get this URL to work in American memory, you need to copy and paste the whole thing, ending parentheses as well. And Matt comments that the Irish and blacks competed for jobs. Yes, Matt, we're actually going to hear an audio recording from West Virginia that speaks to this very issue. Right now we're in the American time capsule, Three Centuries of Broadsides. This is a broadside to all farmers and tradesmen who want good settlements for themselves and families, especially those lately arrived or that may yet come from Scotland or Ireland. And the way our site works, you see this very small thumbnail image. I'm going to click on it. Now you see a larger image. And it should be large enough for you to read, but if it's not, we can click on a higher resolution image. Very high resolution image. You see the date, 1772. The state of New York, and you have to scroll down because I can't scroll down for you. The state of New York, now if you look at this, it will tell you that the state of New York is inviting people. And yes, Tom is right, it does require horizontal scrolling as well. So what I can do is go back, so you don't have, the print is very large. If you come and read this, you will find that everything in New York is heavenly. It's almost like Camelot, the way they describe how much grain you can grow and how mild the climate is and how inexpensive it is to buy land. But they really, really are courting people from Scotland and Ireland to come over in 1772 and settle in New York. I'm backing out to the smaller version. And that to let you come back, you can come back and read it sometime, but I wanted to just let you know about that. We're going to now go to the maps of the second wave of immigration. Okay, everyone should be with me on the Statistical Atlas of the United States. And again, you see the thumbnail. Well, we're going to use our map technology, but this is a whole book. And so I'm clicking on this thumbnail, and you see a collection of images, 1 through 12 of 107. Well, I'm going to click through here till we get to the one we want to look at. Hope you didn't get dizzy. We're having trouble seeing these images. Now, do you all see them or not? Okay, we've learned something about the technology. And I'm going to have to let you be in control of getting to where we are. So, well, I'm going to take you back, and I'm going to talk to you about you coming here, or with my co-presenter's help. I'm going to take you back.
Let me turn it off. Or Judy, I'm at images 73 through 84. If you know which image it is, I can see the captions below it, like foreign parentage 1870, parents of foreign birth. People could just click on it, I think. I don't know.
Try the one foreign population, Irish and German. It's in the second row, middle image. I'm going to click on this and see if you get it. We have this image up on our machines. Does everyone else have this particular image? Okay, don't everyone answer me at once. Come on, tell me out there in the world if you're on this image with us. Ha ha ha, good. Okay, great. I see everybody. Now, this image is in four parts, and I want you to, I'm going to use our map technology, and this is sort of a little bit of a teaching time so you can go back on your own and not be puzzled by what you see here. Underneath this image, you see two controls, zoom in and window size. Well, I'm going to put the control in the middle of the zoom in, zoom out area, and I'm also going to click under window size the 640 by 480 just because I like a big window. And then I'm going to go up to this large image and click in the quadrant that is in the top right, and I'm going to click sort of near the grid here that sort of gives percentages. You should see things coming back magnified. Yes? Okay, wonderful. Now what this shows is the percent of Irish relative to the rest of the population, and the darker the shaded area, the heavier the concentration. And this is where you can find that the Irish were settled. Now, this is by 1870. So this was actually the first census of this new country published in this particular book form. And they're looking at all of this information for east of the Mississippi River, sort of east. You can see a little bit upper area where it overlaps. But they're looking primarily right at this half of the United States. And I don't know where some people are from Florida, and you'll see there's a slight concentration of Irish down in Florida, but the largest percentage is up in the northern half of the United States. And you should have seen me click to get to this image that shows that half. So this is by 1870. Now I'm going to go to, while you all are, and now that you know how to use this particular technology, while I'm preparing the next image, you all can click around on this. Yes, quite a few in New England. And I was surprised, Tom, to learn that they were all along the Missouri River and up here. I really thought, I've heard of Irish channels in Boston, New York, South Carolina, Charleston area. There's an Irish channel in New Orleans. I really was surprised to see that they were just heavily concentrated in the northern half. Here's another census image, and it's only about 10 years later, but I want you to see the difference, or 13 years later. I want you to see the difference. Everyone, now that you know how to use the map technology, you can go down to the controls below and click around and look at the concentrations all over the United States. The bottom map, the top map is German, and the bottom map is Irish. So I'm going to give you a few minutes or a minute or so to click around and see what you can see. Stephanie, yeah, they obviously like the North better. Why do you think that might be? Railroads, more jobs, non-agricultural job. Might remind them of Ireland. Oh, potatoes. Yes, the climate might be more like Ireland. Perhaps they came with the British. The Irish and the British do not necessarily have the best of relationships, but perhaps they did. What I want to do now is take you, we've seen some maps, we've seen a bit of text, still images, but what I want to do now is talk more about the Irish experience in America. And one way to do that is to take you to our Prints and Photographs online catalog. And I'm going to do a search, but I'm going to let you do a search also, so you can have an opportunity to sample some of the wonderful political cartoons and humorous cartoons and photographs that we've got in the collection. So hold on. We're now at the Prints and Photographs catalog. What I'm going to do is click on the blue button for search the catalog, and you won't see me type, but I'm going to type in Irish American and hit the search button. Now you should see that the number of records that came back is 100, with 196 records containing all of the words. So Irish with the exact phrase and then with all of the words. Now what you see up here on the left is a little purple button that says preview images. And you should now have thumbnails of some of the images in the Prints and Photographs collection. You will see political cartoons, you'll see humorous cartoons, you'll see photographs of Irish Americans, you'll see images such as the wonderful New York Irish policeman, you'll see the Massachusetts infantry camp near Washington, D.C. from the Civil War. You'll see quite a few. And what you can do also, what I want you to do is click on one of the images or one of the captions and see what you find. You could even find a relative. Okay, Whitney has clicked on the image of Evelyn Casey. Terry's talking about an Irish temper. Well, we'll actually talk about characteristics associated with Irish in just a moment. Yes, Whitney, she went to work when she was your age. That was not uncommon. I'm going to do one more click through to the next page of images. Now you can scroll down or scroll to the side to look at these images. And you'll see, as Matt did, that the 69th Infantry is an Irish regiment. Peter's going to talk a whole lot more about that in just a couple of minutes. Does anyone have a particular image or a cartoon that they find interesting?
And looking at are there any like census data that talk about Irish policemen in New York? I mean, were they the predominant ethnicity of the New York PD employees?
Tom, that census catalog atlas goes into great deal by occupation. I don't recall seeing anything where they split it out, occupation by ethnicity, by geographic location in that particular atlas, but they very well could have. I have a feeling that we'd have to do a bit of searching and possibly go to the New York Public Library or delve into some other census records to find that out for sure.
Tom, this is Peter.
This is Peter.
When I was looking at this topic, I noticed there was a book called The Irish in America, which included the sentence that in 1855, nearly 40% of New York City's policemen were immigrants, and about three-fourths of these immigrants were Irish. So that does seem to indicate that a very large percentage of the policemen in New York City were Irish at the time.
Link to that book also on the handout in our further resources section. Hold on, I'm going to take you to one of the life histories where you'll learn about living conditions. Well, Whitney's looking at 3 days of May 1844. You may have read about it. I'm sorry to take you away, but we have to move on because we have so much more to share. This is a life history. And the fellow here is of Irish parentage. He's was born in Iowa, and his parents were Irish, and he tells you all about homesteading in the Midwest and meeting all sorts of Indians and deciding how to live with the Indians. So I'm going to just scroll down briefly. You can see the first paragraph. This sort of gives you a sense of what it was like to live on the frontier and try to get along with other people. We also have images in our collections of people in sod houses on the frontier. But he ate buffalo and his mother fried buffalo meat for the Indians. They left, they were okay, but other people on the frontier did not fare as well. One thing he says, I'll quote, "There was much to contend with out there: cold, heat, snow, grasshoppers, wolves, rattlesnakes, and hostile Indians. But the general health was good and sickness rare." So, if you'd like to learn more, in our handout, we've got quite a bit, quite other different links to find out more about life there. We're going to an audio recording. Now, don't try this at home, or don't try this right now on your computer. Talisha, you have a question? Talisha, when you press the control key, it generally means you want to say something. Okay. Now, we advise you not to play this on your home compu on your computer there, simply because it could drain your resources. So what we are going to do is play a little bit of this for you, and it will come through your headset for you to listen. But because we're controlling it, we'll be able to turn it off, and it won't do anything to your computer. So we're going to play just a few minutes so you can see what someone in West Virginia said about immigrant laborers and their willingness to work.
Governor West, they'll use the Chinese.
Okie doke. I'm going to play that again, so hold on.
They got a lot of Irish building their railroad, Clark. They still Irish now, not sure. Right, so they came here and built the railroads. Just like up in the West, they use the Chinese. But what they did, in my generation, we paid no mind. For example, some of my teachers were Greek nationals.
Okay, how did that sound to you all? Did you hear it? We know it's sort of a muffled recording. Well, good. I made a mistake. I turned on synchronized browsing, so I turned this on your machines as well. So that was my fault, but I'm glad it worked for everyone. I'm going to take you to another site that talks about the attitudes of people here, Native Americans at that point, or people born in this country, and their attitude towards the new immigrants. This is the Examiner's Questions for Admittance into the American or Know Nothing Party in 1854. It was a response to the mass migration in the 1840s of all of these Irish immigrants. Now, I was watching something where the person asked the people in the audience questions about whether or not they'd ever been new in a town or new in a country, and what they felt like. And I'm sure the immigrant population, Irish immigrants coming over, had similar feelings. This is a response. People who are quote unquote native, i.e. born in this country, resented or had a backlash towards these new Irish immigrants. And if you click on this thumbnail, it takes you to the oath of secrecy that they had to sign, pledging that they would not support anyone who was Catholic or Irish. This had extreme significance for the presidential election. I'm going to take you to another site where you can just see another view of this. This is a book from California, just a Yankee trader. He's writing during the Gold Rush time frame about his attitude towards the Irish. And what I want you to read is just in the first few paragraphs. You'll see that he was glad to hear of Father's election, wish he could go as minister to the court of St. James, and I hope he will carry out the know-nothing principle until the Irish race is utterly annihilated from these United States. The Chinese we can get along with. They don't want to be made citizens. But the Irish have a great deal more to say about elections than we do. I was one of the judges at the polls here at the last election, and we made every man who had an Irish name swear his vote in, and the result was that we stopped about 150 good American citizens, but they couldn't swear it on the Holy Cross. Now, so we've talked a little bit about the problems that the Irish encountered when they got here, the sentiment against them and the prejudice, and some of the discrimination, but the Irish distinguished themselves in the wars that were fought by the United States. And Peter is going to share with you some of the materials that talk about this.
Thanks, Judy. As Judy said, the Irish definitely distinguished themselves during the war, particularly the Civil War. And right now, I am going to guide you to several items in our American Memory Collection. They are posters that serve as advertisements for Irishmen to join and participate in various brigades in the Union Army. So I will bring that up in a second. Okay, you should be able to view thumbnail images of several of the posters that we have in our collection. And please feel free to click on any of them to enlarge them and take a better look at them. As you take a look at them, I will just explain a little bit more about what's probably the most well-known brigade and regiment that fought for the Irish during the Civil War. And this is the 69th Regiment, with which some of you may be familiar. And the regiment also became incorporated into what was called the Irish Brigade later in the Civil War. The 69th Regiment, and let me just lower my sound in case I'm coming across a bit too loud. All right. Part of the 69th New York State Regiment first served in the United States during the American Revolution and also during the War of 1812. The other part of the regiment had its origins in 1851, when Irish citizens of New York City formed a regiment known as the 2nd Regiment of Irish Volunteers. And then on October 12, 1851, the unit was officially accepted as part of the New York State Militia and designated as the 69th Regiment. The 69th Regiment fought throughout the Civil War. They fought in all of the major battles in the Eastern Theater of War, including the Battle of Bull Run and Antietam. They were originally designated as a 90-day unit, so they disbanded after the initial Battle of Bull Run, but they later reformed and became the, along with several other regiments, became known as the Irish Brigade. And I should also point out that the commander of the 69th Regiment was known as Michael Corcoran. And so if you look at several of the posters, you'll notice that Corcoran is mentioned by name. So I'm going to click on the first poster, for instance, and you can see it's an ad for the 69th New York State Militia. And if you scroll down a bit on the page, you'll see that this regiment is the first of the Irish Legion commanded by General Michael Corcoran. All right, I'm going to take you to another item related to the 69th Regiment. We actually have a photograph of several members of the 69th Regiment. And you can click on the image of the photograph to enlarge it. These particular soldiers were photographed at Harrison's Landing in Virginia in July 1862. And Tom asked, I see, a question of the harp. I think that was part of the official seal of the 69th Regiment. We have several other items relating to the regiment. One thing I'll bring up is an envelope that we actually have. There were many envelopes during the Civil War that were created that had various Civil War-related seals on them. And this is one example. So you can see again the seal with the harp on it appears. And if you look closely, you'll also find a little poem at the bottom of the envelope. And I'm going to click back once, and I think the text of the poem is included as part of the bibliographic record of this item. All right, so you can actually see the text of it in the summary section of the bibliographic record. I won't attempt to read the first Irish phrase, but then it says, "Hail to the true and tried, shout their praise far and wide, greet them once more with an Irish hurrah, swift to charge, firm to stand, brave hearts and steady hands, long live the 69th, Erin go bragh." And during the Civil War, there was a lot of sheet music that was published as well, commemorating various units and brigades' efforts in the war. And one piece of sheet music that we have commemorates the 69th, and I'm going to bring that up right now. And you can click on the digital image to enlarge it, or if you scroll down, you can also read the full text of it as a transcription. So I'll just give you a half minute or a minute to take a look at the text. And if anybody has any questions about what I've discussed so far, please ask a question.
The animosity towards the rebels is evident here.
Does anybody know what Erin go bragh means? I remember the phrase actually hanging up in my fourth grade classroom many years ago and somebody asking what it meant, and now I can't remember. Tom says, possibly Ireland forever, which would be appropriate for this. All right, I hope you've all had a chance to take a look at this song. And right now, I am going to take us to another item in our collection, which takes a look at a later permutation of the 69th Regiment. Okay, this first item is something that Judy alluded to when we were looking at the Princeton Photographs online catalog. And it is a poster calling on people, men, to enlist in the 69th Infantry, not for the Civil War, but for World War I. The Irish Brigade and the 69th Regiment still exists today. And during World War I, it was redesignated as the 165th Infantry, and it was also known as the Old Fighting 69th. And I enlarged the image, and you can see that it's calling for people to join the famous Irish regiment that fought in all the great battles of the Civil War, from Bull Run to Appomattox. That's right, I'm sure everybody was very eager to go to the front. And then one final item I will show is actually a page from a newspaper. And this issue is from May 4th, 1919, and it's actually celebrating the return of the 165th Regiment, infantry that is, from World War I. And using this technology is very similar to the map technology that Judy was pointing out early today. We can actually zoom in on different areas of this newspaper to take a better look at the photographs and to even read the text in the captions. So I'm going to enlarge one specific area so we can take a better look at it. All right, so if you scroll a bit down, you can see one image of three soldiers walking. And actually, it says the Father Francis Patrick Duffy, noted chaplain of the old 69th, passing the reviewing stand between two members of the regimental headquarters staff. And now I'm looking at the photograph of the women who are members of the Catholic Women's League, and they're standing in front of St. Patrick's Cathedral. Whitney, that's a good question, and one that I'm really not certain about. If you send a question using our Ask a Librarian form that we pointed out a little bit earlier on, one of our reference librarians will definitely be able to take a look at that and get back to you with a definite answer as to whether they were paid. The St. Patrick's Cathedral is in New York. All right, I am going to turn things back over to Judy now, who is going to talk a bit about the cultural contributions of the Irish to the United States.
Terry, your question about St. Patrick, I'm going to let you use our Ask a Librarian service because I know they will send you quite a few good URLs where you can explore to your heart's content and learn as much as you'd like about St. Patrick. Meanwhile, I'm going to take us to song and dance. You should be with me for the wearing of the green. This particular song is very, very much a part of Irish lore. If you'll scroll down, you'll read the words for this particular song. I went on a search on Google and found this all over. Jude says it is one of his favorite songs, and he sings it every March 17th. It is very political. Yes, indeed it is. What I saw across the internet was that you saw just the text, and here at the library we actually have the song sheet. Not only that, but you can search on this title in our collections, and you can find other versions, and you can find this song with other words. It was actually recreated by members of the Confederacy after the Civil War was over for them to use the same tune, but they called it the Wearing of the Gray. So I invite you to come look in the collections and see what variations we have of this particular song. We're 6 minutes away from ending this program, and we cannot end it without playing some fiddle music. What I've come to is the Irish Washerwoman, and I'm going to take my browser off synchronized browsing, and I'm going to play it and let you hear it. So hold on.
This is the Irish Washerwoman. Thank you.
How is that? Okay, the link to this and others is on our website. So you're welcome to come back and listen to this and play it. And one other thing I'll let you know is that it's possible to download these files. I played an MP3, which you could download to your iPod if you so chose to do. I moved you to another song sheet. This is Rafferty's Party, just to give you a sense that we've got all sorts of things. This is a song called Tim Finnegan's Wake. And not only is it a song, but it gives you a sense of what it was like to go to an Irish wake. Don't do this at home. I've just taken you to a movie. This is old vaudeville. And I don't want you to play this now. I want you to come back and play it later. I'll scroll all the way down. You'll find that part three is a vaudeville comedy sketch about a woman who is hanging out clothes, and they get into a fuss. So I will, because we only have a few minutes, I won't try to play it now, but I invite you to come back. It will remind you a lot of, if anyone remembers, the Three Stooges. So I invite you to come back and play that, but not on shared bandwidth the way we are right now. So one more thing, and then I'm going to turn it over to a special guest that we have. Not only do we have vaudeville and plays and songs and sheet music, but we also have lore and tall tales told by the Irish. I've taken you to one page where a woman talks all about the fairies, the wee sprites of Ireland. And this is just one of many that you can search in these collections and find. But this is just a sample. And knowing now that we have only one more minute, I'm going to turn this over to a very special guest of ours, Anne Tuohy. Move your mic. Anne is a specialist in our local history and genealogy reading room at the Library of Congress. And you can also guess by her name that she has done a lot on Irish genealogy. And you all were text writing about your backgrounds. It may not be Irish, it might be German, it could be Puerto Rican, it could be anything. But Anne is going to just talk just a bit about how you might. Anne is going to talk just a minute about getting some help. So what we will do is get you to her part of the library's website, and I'll maneuver us there as Anne speaks.
Hi, I was real interested to see that the genealogy came up just right by itself, and that you were interested in finding out about how to find your families. I've done a lot on Irish genealogy because obviously Tuohy is a very Irish name. Now, we've brought up the genealogy webpage, and basically you can take a look at this. There'll be some things that will help all of you find your families. One thing I should point out right away is that we also have an Ask a Librarian on here. So although I can't go into depth on all of your questions, I can tell you that you can get help by asking your questions on this page. Also, you can take a look at some of the bibliographies and guides. We have our American Memory. We have a lead into that. We've been looking at a lot of things on American Memory this afternoon. We have some other internet web sources which will take you out into the web. And so there's all kinds of things that you can start with on this the finding of your genealogy.
So, does anyone have any questions before we leave you for today?
In your research about the Irish in America, are there any sort of waves of reverse emigration back to Ireland? Has that ever happened in the history of the Irish in America?
Tom, I don't know about in the history, but just the other day in the New York Times, I read an article about the Irish going back home. Especially in New York City, and it was because of the increased diligence of our Immigration and Naturalization Service in light of 9/11. So there are a lot of people over here illegally, And what they're now determining is that it's just better for them to go back to Ireland. If you'd like, I can find you that New York Times article.
I think in the 19th century also, people went back because of political movements. And so if they were participating in those kinds of things in this country, they sometimes traveled back and forth across the ocean.
Well, Talisha and Stephanie, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Heidi as well. Thank you all for coming. And be sure to check the Opal page so that you can see what other programs Opal has for the month of March and beyond.
Yeah, and I'm recording this session, and I'll put it up on the Opal Archive and also podcast the audio portion of it. So thanks very much, Judy and Peter. Another great program.
All you need to do, folks, to leave is just go up to File and then Exit one by one, and you will leave our conference. And so we will see you next month. Have a great March 17th.